Welcome back to the third hour of Shattering Myths. As we always do, we're going to turn our attention to Yanoi's testimony. While our analysis of what he had to say is interesting in the sense that we are trying to apply what he had to share with us to religious myths, to political malfeasance. It's always rewarding to turn our attention directly to his words. This is the next statement. It is from Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 17. It's the 13th statement. This is the fourth encounter between Yahweh and Yahusha, and this all follows the establishment an affirmation of the one and only covenant with Abraham. God is really clear, by the way, in establishing the fact that this is his one and only covenant. And he's made it really clear that this this one and only covenant is going to endure forever, and that it's going to be for all people in all places. And that there, in fact, in the previous statement, he even made the point that there are two ways to participate in it. You can be naturally born into it, in a sense of being a descendant of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, or you can be adopted into it. Now, this is what his next statement is, and it's pretty direct, in fact. The first verb here is repeated twice. Larry, when we use Hebrew, what does it mean when a verb or a word is repeated?
It's amplified. I mean, you seriously consider that word. Yeah.
Yeah. It means, like, for example, when Yahusha is referring, or Yahweh is referring to Yahusha, and he calls him the Kodesh Kodesh versus the Spirit, which is simply Kodesh. So the Spirit is the set
twice
apart
set
Spirit.
Apart.
Right. Twice set apart. And what that means is that, for example, on Yahusha being the Kodesh Kodesh, which is also the what's referred to as the Holy of Holies of Yahweh's Tabernacle, where the Ark of the Covenant is, it's also Kodesh Kodesh, and that means it's the most set apart. It's the extreme of being set apart. So it reads here, he, this is who, that's the third person masculine singular pronoun, should absolutely circumcise him. Definitely cutting off the foreskin. This is mul mul. He should cease whatever he's doing. He should turn him around to face in the opposite direction to ward off threats of his well-being by changing his priorities while making binding promises. This was scribed in the Niphil stem, denoting not only genuineness of this relationship, but the Niphil stem means that the subject, those of us who are encouraging the circumcision of our sons as parents, receive a passive benefit, while our sons receive an actual benefit, an assertive benefit, is what the Niphil stem conveys. It was written in the infinitive absolute, which intensifies further the importance of the act, and then was also scribed in the imperfect conjugation. Larry, I'm sure you've gotten such an earful of Hebrew grammar that if I say imperfect conjugation and it's applied to you should absolutely circumcise and definitely cutting off the foreskin, what would be the implications? Yeah, means there's ongoing benefits here, right? Means that the act is for all time; it shall never cease. And it has ongoing benefits. Therefore, when Paul wrote that circumcision is counterproductive and that you can't be saved if you're circumcised. Now, it's kind of hypocritical of Paul to write because he himself was circumcised and his lover, Timothy, he circumcised personally. But
because
when Paul
was forced to.
But when Paul says that circumcision is counterproductive, if you're circumcised, you can't be saved. And that the circumcision was passé. It was an act of the flesh. It was counterproductive. It was part of the tyranny of the Torah. Does God concur if he scribed mul muls, you should absolutely circumcise him in the imperfect?
That's like using his name for all time. time and all generations and all places. It's a definite.
We really cheat ourselves when we examine Yahweh's testimony if we don't consider the stems, the moods, the conjunctions. And here, the stem is extraordinarily telling. Now, the stem tells us that there's a passive benefit to the person performing the circumcision or arranging the circumcision of their sons, and that they are going to have the benefit of circumcision, which is to be cut off from the world, world of human schemes, and cut into the covenant, but it because this is the sign of the covenant. But it also says that the children are going to be prepared so that both the parents and the child are in a position to remember that this the relationship between being separated and the covenant. But by using the imperfect conjugation, there is no getting around the fact that this is ongoing. The imperfect conjugation says that the act being discussed has no completion. It has no end. That's what it means.
Can I add something here?
Sure.
This is why in Chabacuak, or Habakkuk, I think it's written in English. It means embrace this.
Uh-huh.
Yah writes this about a guy named Sheol.
Yes.
That he says is going to be around during the time of the sacrifice.
Right, which would be the fulfillment of the first four Moed Mikrae. The first four Moed Mikrae were fulfilled in year 33 CE in our pagan calendars, year 4000 Yah. So this individual named Shaul, and that was Paul's given name, was around, in fact, he was in Jerusalem learning to be a rabbi during that particular time. All right, so we've identified the time and the individual by name.
Here's what he says about this individual. Woe to the one who provides, causes, and allows his neighbors, companions, or countrymen to drink, thereby associating them with venomous wrath, but also making them drunk for the purposes of observing their genitals. Okay? So we know he's a sexual pervert, too. You will get your fill of shame and infamy instead of honor and glory. In addition, you also show yourself unacceptable going roundabout over the lack of circumcision. Now that's, wow.
Yeah, and that was Paul's argument. I mean, the reason that Paul was called to the Jerusalem summit, your point here is absolutely emphatically accurate. The reason that Paul was called, Shaul was called to the Jerusalem summit, is he was saying that circumcision was not only not necessary, but that it was counterproductive. So the disciples called him in and said, wait a minute, there's no, Yahusha didn't say that the Torah was being annulled. He said every aspect of the Torah would continue to endure. The Torah says that if you're not circumcised, you can't participate in the covenant, you can't participate in Passover, you can't enter God's home. You know, what in the world are you doing here? And what you have is God now, 700 years before, 600 years before Paul would speak against circumcision, saying that he would do so. And he's saying that if you're not circumcised as a man, you're not acceptable. Wow.
Yeah, we're once again Paul versus, you know, the creator of the universe. By the way, I want to point something out here, too. You know, Yahweh puts a lot of stock in a name.
Yes, he does.
As in Zachariah, meaning remember Yahweh, or Yahweh, remember, you know, as Yahweh's gift. Mm-hmm. Yahweh Kanan.
Yahweh's merciful.
Merciful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's always Hebrew names he gives people, by the way.
Right. Right.
And yet Sheol claimed he was renamed Paul, a Roman name, not Hebrew at all.
Given by God.
It means least and lowly and little. Wow. And Sheol means question him. So,
right.
You know, if anybody thinks that Yahweh took a spokesman and gave him such a name, when he put such stock in a name, in Revelation, remember,
right,
he talks about, well, there's a little white stone, you'll unturn it, and you'll get your new name,
right,
and only you will know it, you know.
Right.
I mean, he puts incredible stock in a name.
That's correct.
And all through Scripture, all of a sudden, a guy named question him in one language, and lowly or little or least in another language.
Yeah, really.
He's going to be, I mean, that on its face is outrageous. I just wanted to bring that up.
Hey, were there any of Yahweh's prophetic witnesses that were egotistical, that said, look at me, I'm special, that had an ego issue?
No, they didn't even talk about themselves. I don't recall any of them saying much of anything about themselves. I mean, whatever little we know about any of them is more like, when did they live? I mean,
yeah, what other people would say about them, but they were never promoting themselves. They always viewed themselves as inadequate, but that's not the case with Paul. But it is interesting that you point out that here Yahweh is saying that circumcision is forever the sign of the covenant. You should always, throughout time, circumcise your sons, and it's going to have a passive benefit to you, a positive and active benefit to them. So it's an extraordinarily powerful pronunciation and proclamation. But there is even more to the statement. We didn't get through the end of it. It says he should absolutely circumcise him, definitely and for all time, always cutting off the foreskin of the naturally born Yalid. That's someone who is born into the family, the old-fashioned way, through old-fashioned child book, therefore related to Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, in your home, Beath, because the covenant is about family and home, and also those really wanting to be included, this Kesep Mikna, those deeply desiring, for those of us who are Goyim, this is us where we choose to be adopted into the family, who are acquired. This shall be, this shall exist as, this was, this is, and this always will be. This was written as Haya, which is the basis of Yahweh's name. My family covenant relationship in the flesh, in the physical realm, serving as an everlasting and eternal family-oriented relationship. So God is saying that this instruction relative to circumcision, which helps us remember, helps us understand the nature of the covenant, he's saying that this shall exist as his family covenant relationship in the flesh, in the physical realm, serving as an everlasting and eternal family-oriented relationship. One. There is one covenant, according to Yahweh, for all time. That means, folks, there cannot be a new covenant. That means there cannot be a New Testament. You know, for those who are looking to a Christian book called the New Testament and think that's the Word of God, this says no. The one and only covenant is eternal. There will never be a new one. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about Yahweh's presentation of his covenant. And he's speaking of those who are both naturally born and those who choose from other countries, from foreign countries, not Israel, to be adopted into the covenant, that for both they shall be circumcised, and that this is an the essence of the covenant, that it exists as his covenant in the flesh for an everlasting and eternal family-oriented covenant relationship. So from God's point of view, is there something evil associated with the flesh?
No.
No.
Not really.
So when Paul promotes the Gnostic view that the flesh is evil and the spirit is good, which is pure Gnosticism, it goes right back to Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and the like, it's Greek Gnosticism, was he speaking for God?
No. Couldn't have been.
No. Does God ever once say, you know, the flesh is bad? When he said, when he created animals in the flesh, or when he created mankind in the flesh, did he say, oh, wow, this flesh thing, this is really bad?
No.
No,
not at all.
No.
But none of us are spiritual beings. We're not beings of pure energy. I wish people understood what spiritual meant.
Right.
It doesn't mean some mystical thing.
No, it's just energy based.
It's literal energy based.
Right. By the way, for if the flesh were bad, if Paul were right and the flesh were bad, since energy is equivalent to matter, just it's a lesser amount matter is a lesser amount of energy. But since E equals MC squared,
You'd have a totally evil being.
Right. That means that if the flesh is evil by this correlation between the energy, therefore light, and matter, that would mean that light would have to be evil. And spirit would have to be evil. So based upon what Paul said, if you just simply run the equation and you actually come to know what E equals MC squared means and how God says that he's going to amplify us, increase us, empower us by transitioning us into energy-based beings, into light, you'd have to know that flesh cannot be evil unless, in fact, everything is evil, including spirit. Oops.
Right.
Oops. Right. And that was the flaw in Socrates and Plato's thought. Now, of course, their thought was based upon this notion that the physical world that we're witnessing was evil, and it was simply a reflection of a perfect world that existed someplace out there. They did not.
Do you know what I'm doing this minute? Do you know what I'm doing this very moment?
No.
I'm scratching my evil cat's head. She seems okay.
She seems okay. But, you know, if I were to introduce my evil dog to your evil cat, my dog would see your cat as evil. But putting that aside for the moment, if Plato and Socrates and Aristotle understood what Einstein made available to us, that there really isn't a distinction between the mundane and the spiritual. There isn't a distinction between matter and energy. That energy and matter are exactly the same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing, then at that very moment, they would recognize that their whole hypothesis was wrong.
Yeah, all matter is just stabilized light.
Right. So it's impossible for matter to be evil, as Paul says, the flesh is evil and the spirit is good, because they are the same thing. It's just that we are a diminished product of light energy.
And that goes back to why Yah was going to be pretty picky about who he gives that power to. By the way, it's going to be the people that agree with him.
Yeah.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
It's a lot of power to wield. Really.
Yeah, exactly. So, God is making it as clear as words allow that he has only one covenant. Therefore, there cannot be a new covenant. Therefore, there is no such thing as a New Testament. There's only one covenant. It is eternal. And that it has a statement, a sign, a point of reference that helps us understand that is actually emblazoned in the flesh. So when a Christian, as the Seventh-day Adventist did, focus on baptism rather than circumcision, they're in essence excluding every parent and every male child from participating in the covenant. And if you don't participate in the covenant, you can't be saved.
Well, as it happens, I mean, I was raised by atheists, but I was circumcised. I guess there's a lot of people that are just by chance, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it's so much by chance as there are health benefits associated with being circumcised. That's why it's being promoted throughout Africa right now with all of the sexually transmitted diseases ravaging the continent. There's a health benefit, and so those who acknowledge the health benefit, we have that good fortune of having been circumcised as children by our parents. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Having read Yahweh's statement about this covenant being eternal, being everlasting, being olam, being never-ending, a new covenant of any kind, and therefore a New Testament, much less one where circumcision was not required, is a complete farce. So the very notion that Christianity is based upon a New Testament and that baptism replaces circumcision, that means that there is an irresolvable and major conflict. This is not a subtle thing. God has gone on and on and on about the role that circumcision plays in his covenant. You're not circumcised. You're not participating in his covenant. And so this gets right to the core of Yahweh's primary desire, which is for us to choose to participate in the covenant and what he's expecting for us if we choose to participate. And Christianity and Yahweh are absolutely in opposite corners here. So is there any way Christianity can win that fight?
No, they're fighting against the creator of the universe. I've had this debate. I've had it 100 times, and in each case they will side with Paul. They'll actually make fun of it.
Yeah. So what they'll do is they'll and Paul makes fun of circumcision. He is. I mean, Paul's first letter to the Galatians. Paul even takes the stylus away from the scribe that is writing down his hate-filled tirade to the Galatians, and he says, "Now I'm writing these letters with my own hand in really big letters, and I'm going to tell you here that circumcision is death. That circumcision is a request. That circumcision is slaves." Right.
Important. He says it's important. I am personally writing.
Right,
this
right, right.
And so, wowee, man.
Right. So, for a Christian to embrace Paul's position, which is the antithesis of God's position, it puts the Christian in absolute and irresolvable conflict with the Creator God of the universe. So, by the way, this fight is not just between a man and his religion against God, which obviously God prevails over the man and his religion, but not in the Christian mindset. They've been deceived. They won't go where the truth leads them. But beyond all of that, the very statement of Paul, where he says that he claims to speak on behalf of, that he was inspired by, that his teaching comes from, and his words come from, the very same God that he is undermining, if you're rational and informed, you'd have to say, well, that's impossible. I mean, that's literally impossible. Can you imagine God saying, my testimony is eternally valid and true. You can always trust me, and I have this one covenant that is eternal and everlasting. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to then, I can't even say this amongst, with my son, with Yahusha, but after Yahusha is gone, I'm going to employ this murderous, demon-possessed man named Shaul, who's going to use the name Paul. And I'm going to inspire him to contradict everything I've said, to undermine everything I've said, to call me completely impotent and mean-spirited. And I'm going to then endorse his plan, which is wholly different than mine. I mean, how is that even remotely credible?
Well, it isn't, unless you're a politician. You know, you don't wait 3.5 years after somebody's gone and then come in. And by the way, I'm going to send you somebody that's going to be in total opposition to everything I ever taught you, and he's going to reteach you 3.5 years from now. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ludicrous.
Yeah. It means that you have to be either ignorant of the evidence or irrational to be a Christian.
One or the other.
It's based upon this testimony alone, the basis of Christianity is invalid. The religion is false. That means
pretty sure Yahweh says every word that comes out of his mouth will get its intended result. Every word.
Right.
Every word.
And he's saying here, he's using Haya, the basis of his name, to say this was, this is, this always will be the basis of my covenant, and that my covenant is eternal and everlasting. And he's, in the previous statement, he says it's for all time, for all people, and it's not just for the direct descendants of Jacob, those who are naturally born into the family, but also for those who are adopted, those who choose from foreign lands to participate. That would be everyone, wouldn't it?
Yeah, anyone that's going to be in the covenant, they either have to be adopted in or be naturally born. One of the other. There's no other way to do it.
So God has completely destroyed the religion that claims to speak for him. That's the reason, by the way, that it's impossible for Christianity to be true. You can't claim that you've been inspired by the God whom you contradict. If you're annulling his testimony, which he says is everlasting and always dependable, and your chief prophet, the founder of your religion, is annulling everything that he said and said it's not true, it's been replaced, that is an impossibility.
Yeah, so it's impossible. The people that talk about the flood?
Yes. They're the ones that are opposed to the big bang. Right, they're the ones that are opposed to the Big Bang. Because they think that's scientists and not God. These are the ones because God references from his perspective a 6-day creation to say that the earth is only 6,000 years old. These are the guys that pick and choose and say, I like that part, but I don't like any of the rest of this.
Yeah, they cherry pick, and then they don't even understand what they're cherry picking. And
that is correct. Yeah, when Yahweh says that that the celebration of my Shabbat as a day that is set apart will also be eternal and everlasting, they're the ones that say, no, we replace that because we like Sunday better because Sunday actually resonates more with people because it's the day that all pagans celebrated their worship of the pagan deity, the sun. It is so pathetic, Christianity. It's so obviously wrong that it's frustrating for you and I to recognize that nearly 3 billion people have been poisoned with this package of lies. How do you think that God is responding to all this?
By the way, I want to point out here too, when I get on here with you and knowing you, these words are shared out of compassion.
Yes.
They're not shared to demean you if you're a Christian. They're not shared with you if you're a Muslim to demean you. They're shared with you so that you'll come to understand there's only one path. We know that path. We'll be happy to share it with you. You know, you can go to yadayah.com or itg.com, blessyahweh.com, any of those sites, and you can begin to understand that narrow path that Yahusha talked about. That few people
Or if you're a Christian, read thequestioningpaul.com. No one has ever made it from beginning to end of that book and remained a Christian.
Especially the new version.
Now, if you are a devout Christian, you probably won't even be able to read through the first four or five pages because it will confront you with realizations that you can't process. And so, unless you're willing to go where the truth leads, even if it means taking your religion from you, unless you're willing to go where the truth leads, you won't be able to process it. But if you're willing to give up your religion when it's proven to be untrue, Questioning Paul is an extraordinary experience, and I would strongly encourage our listeners to read it, because it proves emphatically that Paul was a false prophet, that he ought not be trusted, that you ought to disregard everything he had to say. And this issue of circumcision, the reason we're bringing it up, is that Paul's religion is based upon a demeaning circumcision. Circumcision is the fulcrum upon which the Pauline argument, Pauline doctrine, literally pivots on circumcision. It's why he calls the Torah of the flesh. It's why he discounts it. It's why he says it's enslaving. It's why he discounts this covenant that is being presented here in the Torah. It is the basis of Paul's argument against God, is circumcision. So it's really important that you understand what God had to say, and you understand Paul's point of view in protest of circumcision, because if one is right, the other is wrong. And there is no way for Paul to be right, because he claims to be speaking on behalf of the God that said, if you weren't circumcised, you aren't welcome. That's as simple as we can make it. And so, you know, here's God's next section. He says, next statement, and the uncircumcised male, who relationally is not circumcised with regard to the flesh of the foreskin, those souls shall be cut off, they shall be excluded and banished from the family. By way of association, by way of association, they violated, they broke, they disassociated themselves from my family-oriented covenant relationship. Bereshith, in the beginning, Genesis 17:14. There is no way around that. You can't say, that was true until Jesus ushered in the New Testament and all of that went away, because he said exactly the opposite. He said that every jot and tittle, every letter, every stroke of every letter, from the smallest letter to the largest ones, to the strokes themselves of the letters that comprise the words that are found in the Torah and the prophets, that they are going to endure so long as the heavens and earth endure. Is the earth still here?
Last I checked, and so is the universe, or what they're calling
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So they are still in place. So Yahusha said, no, 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 I didn't come here to annul it. Don't you even think for a moment that I came to annul it. And yet, God is saying, man, if you aren't circumcised as a man, you are excluded from his family. You are disassociated from the covenant because you nullified the agreement.
Yada, can I ask you something?
Sure, sure.
Okay, let's assume that you spent 3 years walking with Yahweh. Okay.
Yeah.
And he told you that every time you see a black stone, to make sure not to touch that stone, for whatever reason. I mean, he just told you this.
Yeah, okay. Hypothetically.
And then let's say that I came around 3 years later and said, don't worry, I know a lot of things. I'm a very knowledgeable man, and look at my position in my society. It's way above you. You're a peon.
Right.
But look, I'm going to bend down and help you here. So from now on, when you see a black stone, I want you to pick it up and rub it on your head.
Yeah.
Because I had a secret meeting with Yahweh, and he told me that.
Yeah. And it's the opposite of what Yahusha told his disciples. This is true of circumcision. It's true of the Torah. It's true of the covenant. It's true of the Word of God. It's true of everything in the conflict between Christianity and Yahweh. We'll return for the last segment in a moment. Welcome back to Shatter and Miss. One of our listeners, James, who is a technologist in a school district in outside of Dallas, Texas, sent me a copy of it. I don't know if it's a textbook or it's lecture notes from a medical school class. So a member of his extended family, and I have the email now covered by the note itself, but a member of his immediate family is in medical school, and they attended a lecture as to which the professor provided a text on circumcision. The lecture was on carcinomas, which are cancers, and it says that circumcision confers protection, that there are no cases of cancers in circumcised males, and there are many cases of cancers in uncircumcised males. This went on to say they don't understand the reasons for this, but as it relates to that, just that one aspect, you know, there's others. The aspect is of course that venereal diseases are less prone to be passed on by a circumcised male than an uncircumcised one, but and infections are less prevalent. But just in terms of cancers.
Well, in terms of getting it on the eighth day, that's when clotting starts.
Yeah.
Also, the eighth day represents eternity.
Right, I know.
Just by chance, you know.
Yeah, but God is being unequivocal here. I mean, there is no way to misunderstand what he's saying. And the uncircumcised male, who relationally is not circumcised with regard to the flesh of their foreskin, those souls shall be cut off, shall be excluded from the family. And by
he literally says they can't partake in Pesach or Passover.
Right. And by the way,
they can't.
Right, and that's so if you're excluded from the family, there is only one family, and that's the covenant. If you're excluded from the family, you cannot engage in a relationship with Yahweh. It is impossible, which means you can't be saved. So it is absolutely impossible. It says, by way of association, they violated and broke, disassociating themselves from the family-oriented covenant relationship. What this underscores is this realization, and I've spent a lot of time studying this, that there are five very specific conditions for participating in the covenant. God would not say they violated the covenant regarding their refusal to be circumcised, unless that was a condition for participating in the covenant. And so this says that's a condition. It happens to be the fifth of five. And if you are going to rebel against, if you're going to say, no way, I'm not going to accept that as my signature, as the sign of the covenant, I'm not going to circumcise my sons, and I myself am not going to be circumcised. God says that you can make that choice. But you need to understand that if you make that choice, you are absolutely excluded from his covenant family because you broke the terms and conditions of the covenant. Now, it's God's family. You know, he gets to choose whether or not that you are allowed in. And you get to choose whether or not you want him. And these are the terms.
I think this is an important point to bring up. There are five terms and conditions for sure that we know of.
Right.
He maps them right out for us, and then there's five benefits you get in return.
Right.
But here's the thing. Is that on the same level, say, as eating a piece of bacon?
No. No, God never says if you eat a piece of bacon that you're excluded from his family. He never says that if you don't keep the Sabbath set apart that you're excluded from his family because you broke the covenant. He provides those instructions because as a loving father, they're good for us to know. And we benefit from those instructions. As it relates to the conditions of the covenant, while they are all in our personal advantage to embrace them, the fact of the matter is that with the terms and conditions of the covenant, they stand out uniquely among everything else. With it's not just instruction that's good for us. It's not just guidance that is beneficial for us. These terms and conditions, you either accept them, and you can become part of God's family, and thereby he will save you. There's five benefits. Salvation is one of them. Or you reject them. And if you reject any one of them, and particularly he's saying circumcision, because there will be the world's largest religion that will be based upon rejecting circumcision. And he's saying, if you reject it, that's your choice, but you're going to be excluded from my family. And if you're not part of the covenant, you can't have a relationship with God. And if you're not part of the covenant, you cannot be saved. It's been my pleasure to bring Yahweh's testimony to you on this day. We look forward to being with you again at this time tomorrow. Thank you, Larry.